Hello and welcome to The Confession Box. I'm your host, Wendy Grace. Coming up on today's episode, I'll talk to the youth coordinator for the Diocese of Armagh, Rob O'Hara. In our conversation, we're going to hear about Rob's life, the ups, the downs, and what role faith has played in it all. From love to loss to looking for happiness in all the wrong places before getting back on the path God had planned for him. That's all coming up on today's Confession Box. Rob, thanks so much for being with us on the podcast today. Maybe before we get into where you're at now, let's go back a little bit further. Was faith something that was always important to you? Was it something that you were brought up with?
Yeah, I'd say crucial growing up for me. My parents were hugely devout and practiced. They were daily mass goers, and I was brought along, and then we prayed the rosary every single day, the family rosary. My mom lived by Father Peyton's motto that a family that prays together stays together. So, but my mom and dad insisted that we all come together and pray the rosary every single day. So, yeah, that's why I had a real personal, close relationship with Jesus growing up as a young lad as well. I saw him as my friend. And as an only child, he was someone that I really developed a deep friendship with growing up. You know, he was someone that I would share my troubles with and talk to when I was at Mass and include him in my life and in my activities going forward. Whatever I was doing as a young lad, be it football, to school, to whatever it might be. He was real. He was very, very real. So faith was a really huge part of my life growing up, especially.
I think probably a lot of people are, their heart is warm just kind of hearing your experience and saddened as well that it's not like that for everybody. And I'm thinking of my own kids. I'm sure you see it the same with your children, Rob. They're still young enough that there is this beautiful stage of, you know, purity and innocence and this gorgeous connection that children seem to have with Jesus, with their lady. But then for many people, life happens. The teenage years happen. College comes, you know, a lot of things try to get in our way. Were you able to kind of keep your faith, or did you find yourself falling away for a period of time?
No, I would agree with you. I totally agree with you. And like you said, I see it with my kids myself, trying to pass on the faith to them, and I can see the love that they have for Jesus and Our Lady, and I would hope that they would continue it. But no, sadly, as I got older, I'd say when I hit around 16, 17, I could see that faith, religion were not seen as kind of the cool thing to talk about or, you know, popular, and I wanted to fit in. So I started finding excuses not to be at home to pray the family rosary, and I got out of getting to Mass except at the weekends on a Sunday. I'd always be trying to avoid it, just doing it my utmost to keep it, actually push it away so that I could fit in with my peers.
Was that a lot of it, Rob? Is that peer pressure, or that feeling of, well, nobody else is doing this, I want to fit in with them, I want to feel like them, it's not cool, yeah. You know, was that the thing that was kind of pushing you away?
Yeah, I'd say like a lot of my friends are like, why did you do that? Or why are you doing it? You get skeptical looks. And I started going, all right, I'm not going to talk about this anymore, and I'm going to blend in rather than stand out. And yeah, I blended in. I did a great job of doing that. You know, I threw myself into absolutely everything else, from sport to socializing to going out, everything. Everything else took precedence over my faith then. And tantamount in my mind at that time was making sure I kept my popularity with my peers and appeased them, and became like the funny, popular guy that loved to have a laugh and mess and was up to anything for a laugh. And that went through the rest of my teens and into my young adulthood as well.
What happened in college then? Because the teenage years they're tumultuous enough, and there's so much change and puberty and hormones and all that sort of stuff. But college kind of takes it to another level, because you still have all those things, but coupled with kind of independence, and you're an adult now. So what sort of choices did you make at that part of your life?
Oh, yeah. I won't dismiss my college years. There's a lot of fond memories I have from college years, and I made a lot of good friends in college. But I threw myself into the social scene in college in a major way. You know, there was the opening of a letter at college. I was at it, you know, and I'd be the first to be breaking out into the alcohol and having a great time with all of them, and, you know, leading the charge to the pubs or the nightclubs thereafter. And, you know, and I really threw myself into that whole party scene, and, you know, up late staying out late and staying in early in the bed, recovering from the night before. That became a lot of my college years. And I did well in college. Now I got through and I got my qualification for accountancy and everything at that time. But yeah, again, and then money became a big part of it, making the money and making sure that I had a lot of money in my bank and in my pocket. And so that, coupled with popularity and socializing, they became, for want of a better expression, the most important thing in my life. And that was fine to a certain point.
How were
Then
you
I
feeling
started.
deep down? Because a lot of people, I think, Rob, will identify with all the things you're talking about, saying, yeah, being there, done that, and you can kind of distract yourself, and it's one kind of distraction after another, one merriment after another. But when you get the time to think and you get the silence, were you satisfied? Were you happy, really?
No, and that's I think would be the word I'd use is empty. No matter what I filled it up with, I always felt there was this emptiness. I couldn't fill it up enough. I kept trying to take more of the world, more social, more bigger jobs, whatever it might be, and fancy clothes, nice car, everything to try and fill that emptiness, and nothing, absolutely nothing could fill it. I always was feeling this little niggle of emptiness. Now, it's important to stress that even at this time, I went to mass every Sunday. I'd stand down the back, meant nothing. I was going to keep the peace at home.
Do you think, though,
Because
for parents listening, that maybe they're in this situation right now where they have a teen or someone in their 20s and they're thinking, where did I go wrong? And we felt we did all the right things. Do you think those things, though, they laid a foundation, Rob? That the times when you did pray the rosary or being kind of strong-armed into going to mass, that they kept the kind of niggling voice in the back of your mind. Did it make a difference?
Oh, 100%. I think the prayers of parents is crucial. Like, I know my mom and dad never stopped praying for me, and it's eventually, I know we'll get to it, but it's eventually what brought me around to coming back and seeing the error of the path I'd chosen and seeing the light. But it's parents, like, no matter how difficult or how crazy you might think your son or daughter's life has gone, never stop praying for them. And because those prayers will be used to their help, to their advantage at some point in their life. You might be blessed to see it, you may not, but at some point those prayers will reap reward. And absolutely.
Okay,
And
so
even
you're at the point, Rob, you're standing at the back of the church, you're going out, you're trying to fill yourself with all sorts of things that aren't bringing you happiness. Was it a slow journey back to faith, or was there kind of a light bulb moment for you?
No, slow. I would say I wasn't the same Paul. It didn't fall off a horse, and there wasn't a blinding light for me. But I'd say there was more a case of that niggle never went. I remember telling lads and friends on nights out, jeepers, there's nothing to this. I'm getting fed up with this. This means nothing. And they used to think I was crazy. And it's funny, Wendy. Like, as I said, I went to mass every Sunday. I'd be the first out the door the minute the priest was finished. And I'd be picking up a paper during the homily. I was doing everything now that I would abhor. But I met a young couple, a young married couple that were there at mass with their young family, and they saw me, and they said, "Oh, you're a young person. Maybe you'd like to come to a prayer meet." And I nearly laughed in their
He
face
said,
trying
come
to do
again?
that.
What? Prayer meeting?
Yeah. I was like, not a chance, because, like I said, we grew up in my faith. My mom was very charismatic. So I went to an awful lot of charismatic prayer groups growing up from 8, 9, 10, 11. I was in that circle as a young lad playing in the background and even joining in at times. So I knew what a prayer group was, and I was like, that is absolutely no way I'm going to that. But kept niggling, and that invite that they offered me wouldn't go away. And I remember being out with my friend, one of my closest friends at the time, and we were in the supermarket. We were going to a house party, and I had, as usual at that point, I was buying a good amount of alcohol, and I was in the queue behind, as it happened to be, the husband of this couple. And I was like, please don't let him turn around and see me. He's going to judge me. He's going to think I'm an alcoholic. He's going to think I'm a sinner. This is one of these holy just. Everything uncharitable that you could think about, someone was going through my head. And I was like, no, absolutely, I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to talk to him. But he turned around and I made small talk with him. And I made excuse after excuse as to why I hadn't gone to the prayer meeting, even though he never brought it up. And when we left, my friend said to me, "What was that? You acted really weird there." And I went, "What are you talking about?" He went, "You kept talking about a prayer meeting and how why you hadn't gone and all the reasons in your life." And he said, "But that lad never brought it up. He was just making small talk with you. You kept giving him the excuses." And I was like, "Right, but he was going to." And then there was this moment. I suppose you would say it was a moment, and I always remember it. And my friend, my really good friend, he would be he wouldn't believe, he would have no faith, even to this day. I don't think he's much faith at all. But he would never practice. And he turned to me. Now, he never remembers saying this, so I suppose you could say it was a God moment. He turned to me and he looked me straight in the face and he said, "Rob, you've given absolutely everything a go. Why are you fighting this so hard?"
Why were you?
Why was I? Yeah, that's what hit me. Why was I? So I kind of reeled me. Now, it's important when you say it, like, as I said, my friend, he does not remember saying that. And he'd have a very good memory. So I know God used him in that moment. I know that 100%, that he used him at that moment, to do that. So I started reflecting on it. Why was I fighting it? Why, when I gave everything else a go, was I so resistant to this? So I plucked up the courage to go to a prayer meeting. It was pure in heart. And it was in Donnybrook at the time. And I remember going in and we had mass and that was fine. And then, but afterwards they did adoration. I hadn't been to adoration since I was 13. And when I went in, I was brought back to what I had known as a young boy, and that was Jesus truly present right there. And that I turned my back on him. I had walked away from him. I had ignored him, someone who had been my best friend and still was my best friend for so many years. It was constantly with me, trying to reach out. And this wave of emotion came over me, and I was really emotional and so sorry for how I'd lived. I had that real, that was the moment. I knew I was never going to let this happen again. I was never going to. That's why I have a love for so much for Jesus in the Eucharist. He's so, like, we believe he is there, body, soul, and divinity. And in my heart of hearts, I will always know that when I go to Mass, the highest prayer we can do, the highest privilege we have as a Catholic, be able to partake in the Eucharist and to sit also in adoration. Like, wow, what a gift. What an absolute gift from God. Like, we can never, ever be thankful enough for that. And I can never thank God enough for what he's given me in that. And it's such an important part of my life now, to be there for Jesus and to give him time and to remember that he is my best friend. And he's shown time and time again why he is my best friend. And he's helped us so many times. He helped me meet my wife. He's helping me raise our children. And he's helped us in some really difficult moments in our life as well. So he's constantly, he's there. And there's no one can ever argue with me on that. I'll never,
And I
never
think hearing
walk away.
that, it's amazing, Rob, just to hear of that experience where you made that real solid decision. And again, I think some people listening might be saying, okay, I did have that moment, but you know what? Then life happened and things kind of get thrown at you. In spite of that experience, was there times where you've been kind of angry with God or questioning him?
No, I suppose, like, I would never get angry at him. I get probably maybe frustrated at times, but I wouldn't get angry at him because I always see God as God and me as like I look at it in the context of my own children now. Anything that God has allowed to happen for me or stop happen or not open the door in that particular situation, it's all, when I look back on it's all been for my good. All been for my benefit. It's all or to teach me something, or to show me something, or to bring me along in my faith. So no, I don't think I've ever been angry at him. No, frustrated probably as to why, for a moment or two. But then I'm brought back to, well, he's God, and his ways are above mine, and I can't understand, I can't see the whole picture. So I have to have complete trust and faith in him. And I think it's like, it was at that moment when I had that experience, and I said to God, look, with your grace, I'm going to, whatever you want, I'm going to do, with your grace. And doors opened left, right, and center for youth ministry at that point in time. I got involved with Youth 2000, became a leader in Youth 2000 for Leinster, and, you know, went to so many retreats. I led summer mission teams going around the country, promoting the faith. And, you know, there have been so many adventures that God's brought me on since I've just been open. And then, of course, I was able to meet my beautiful wife, Bernie.
You did have a few years, though, I imagine, Rob, when you were going, I think my vocation is to get married. But, you know, no eligible lady had come along. How was your trust shaken then? Or were you just kind of steadfast going, no, this is what God wants for me. And, you know, just have to keep hoping and praying.
No, I suppose that would be one of the moments where I was frustrated at times, Wendy. I would say, I was like, Lord, why? I know my heart's desires to get married. I knew I had discerned the priesthood. I knew it wasn't for me. I'd got that very clearly in prayer. And so I knew that. And I was like, well, Lord, look, if you've made that very clear and my vocation is marriage, where is she? Come on. And I would have, there would have been times where I would have been frustrated. But then I would have been taught patience, you know. It goes back to, I suppose, when my kids love that film now, Heaven Almighty, you know. When we ask for patience, does God give us patience, or does he give us opportunities to be patient? And I think that's what God was doing. He was giving me an opportunity to grow in the virtue of patience. I by no means have it nailed down. I do not. But he was teaching me to grow in it and to wait. And that the perfect person from him for me for marriage would come in his perfect time. And she did.
So you met Bernie. Tell us about that. How did that happen? And how did you know she was the one?
I knew fairly quickly, to be honest. I met her. We were doing a Youth 2000 retreat in Navan. I was the regional leader at that time. So I was going around making sure everything was running smoothly. And Bernie was in the music ministry. And I walked across the hall. It was during the Saturday night when confessions were happening and there was praise and worship happening as well. And Bernie was leading the praise and worship. She was singing one of the songs to the Lord. And I could see her, and she wasn't looking at me. She was looking at Jesus in the Eucharist, and she was singing her heart out. And I just went, what? I really want to get to know her. And that was a moment where I went, wow. And sure enough, the next day on the Sunday, when it was all over, I tried to be cool. And I said, look, all the volunteers and ourselves, we're going for a Chinese. Anyone who helped out, do you want to come along? And I got a flat no. Now, she always says she wants people. The reason was she was so tired. She'd been out working on mission herself for a few months before that. So she was exhausted and she just wanted to get home at that point. She said, I wasn't saying no, I was just tired and wanted to get home. But for me, at the time,
you persisted, Rob. And fast forward now to several years later, and tell us a little bit about your life now and your kids and all that.
Yeah, so we're married 8 years. They're gone on the 3rd of June. 8 wonderful years. We have 3 fantastic little girls. Bernie and myself have Lucy, who is 7. Ray Gemma, who is going on 4 in a week and a bit, and Rachel, who's 1, and we have 2 little boys in heaven.
Tell us a little bit about that, Rob, that time in your life that was, I would imagine, tested. So Bernie was pregnant with twin boys, yeah. And what happened?
Yeah, so we got the great news that Bernie was pregnant with twin boys, Jacob and Joseph, and it was very exciting, really great. Nothing to say that there was anything going to be wrong or anything like that. Everything was fine. And after Christmas, Bernie felt literally, I'd say, it had just been after New Year's. So a few days after, Bernie said something's not right. And we went up to the hospital and they did scans and they discovered that the amniotic fluid around the boys was draining. There was a tear in the sac, and there was very little they could do, is what they said. So Bernie and I prayed, And we had complete faith and complete trust in God, but we're open to his will. And for a week that led up to when the boys went home to heaven, from that Monday to the Saturday, we had a real sense of joy in us. You know, we knew hope was limited, but we had hope because we had hope in God, and God can do anything.
It's amazing to hear you
And
speak about it in that way, Rob, because I'm sure you're praying and you're hoping for a miracle. And it's for me listening to you, kind of like that's some trust. I just don't know if I could have that trust that you had. And then to not get the miracle that you would have hoped for, which was for the babies to survive. Did it shake your faith? I mean, was that a time where you kind of thought, what's going on? Or did you just turn to God for comfort?
You know, it sounds crazy, Wendy, because you know, I'd say a lot of people who are out there would get angry or question God at this time, and get frustrated and say, "I did so much for you, and you've let this happen," and so forth. You know, but no, I was brought to the passage of Job. The Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And it was in that prayer of Job that that was where I got my strength. I understand completely what Job meant in that scripture passage. And for me, it got me through because I relied on God, and it got Bernie through. You know, we were able to hold them. They were 18 weeks old, and we got to hold them. That was a blessing. We were able to give them a Christian burial. That was another blessing from God. You know, we have so many memories where we know God was there, and the strength that we had to get through it, and also our witness in the hospital. God used us for that because it was a week after the abortion laws had passed, and abortions were operating in the hospital, and a lot of the staff, you could see it on them, were struggling. The fact that this is now not just a maternity unit, but also abortions are happening too. And they struggled with it, and they were amazed to see the hope that we had for life, and how we fought for life, and how we chose life. Because, you know, it was said, "Look, there's absolutely no hope here. They're going to die, et cetera. And, you know, if you want to end this sooner, let us know," so forth and so forth. And we fought to try and save them, and the hospital fought to try and save them, and they really joined in. It was a joint effort to try and choose life and fight for it. And they did, and the doctors were amazing, and they were incredible, and you know, everything was just. I think they were shocked that we weren't asking them, "Look, just end this and put us out of our misery," you know, that we were choosing to fight for life, and they fought for life.
Yeah,
I
and
remember
I
talking to
imagine,
them.
Rob, in the and probably still now in the time afterwards, there was a roller coaster of emotions, and as you say, your faith was something that was such a support to you. How does your faith help you in your marriage and as a dad, and just kind of in the practical, in the everyday?
In the everyday, yeah, it does. Because I can turn it. No, I'm not perfect on this by any means. I'm human. So you know, when the kids do something wrong, and I can lose it, I lose it. But I try not to. You know, I'm brought back to, like, I have to be more patient. I have to explain better. You know, and the Lord teaches me in those moments where, just as much as one of the girls has done something wrong, I might mess up too as a parent, and I'm brought back, and God teaches me how to be a better father to my daughters. And he like I look to him and how to be a good father, and I look to Saint Joseph, and I pray, I intercede to Saint Joseph as a role model for fathers, and how to be the best father I can be for my family, how I can be the best provider and supporter to my wife, and give the strength. You know, like the months that followed after, like we had, I mean, yeah, they were hard, but you know, the one thing is, again, it's leaning on God. Like, I don't know, I wouldn't have got through all of that only for him. You know, and Bernie's the same. You know, it was every night we still turned and prayed. The night before they died, we actually gave them back to the Lord. It was the Friday night, and we said, "Jesus, if it's of your holy will for them to go back to you, then we won't fight it. We're not going to be resistant, and we're not going to be angry. We're open to your will on that." And then the next day, the boys went home. Now, it's our goal as parents to get our children to heaven. You know, thanks be to God, Jacob and Joseph are up there, And with God's grace, I'll get up there myself someday, and I'll be able to hold them again, you know.
And your
and
but
that for
your
me.
faith is so, the roots are so deep, Rob. And I know, you know, with your work obviously in youth ministry, and it's incredible to see that journey God has taken you on, because when you kind of really reignited your faith, that's where that reignition began in that youth ministry. It's continuing now, but it's not an easy time to be kind of trying to teach young people about faith and why it's important, and, you know, Jesus is real and it should have an impact on your life. Tell us about your work and the kind of challenges that you face, the opportunities. What is it like, your role?
I love it. I absolutely love it. Yeah, there's challenges to it, challenges to everything. But like, I think sometimes people are too quick to write young people off, that they're not interested, that they don't want to know, or they're indifferent. That's never, I've not found that the case. Okay, in a group there may be one or two. Yeah, sure. But for the majority, that's not the case. And a lot of young people are searching, and they want answers, and they want the truth. They don't want to be fed a load of nonsense. They want to hear the truth. And the Catholic Church has the truth. And when you start telling them and teaching them and talking to them and walking with them, accompaniment is so, so important. It's journeying with young people. So going around in my job and meeting those young people and doing little projects with them and retreats with them or talks with them on various aspects of the faith and dialoguing with them and allowing them to ask their questions and giving them their freedom and the space to be able to do that without repercussion that they're going to get in trouble. I found that a lot of young people are so open to the faith, and that it's not as dead as it may seem. A lot of
Do you
the time
think there's a lot more hunger there,
them.
Rob? I mean, it's such a superficial, individualistic culture that young people are growing up in today. But it's encouraging to hear your experience. I think, as you said, you know, we're not giving them enough credit. They actually are hungry for faith. And the fact that we have a kind of whole generation that isn't really evangelized at all, is that an opportunity?
Yeah. I think we're looking at a generation now where, truthfully, I think the what happened in the past, all the bad stuff that happened in the church, all the scandals and things like that, and how the church has really done tremendous work to get over that and fix all those wrongs and push forward with it. And then you see, like, this current generation aren't as influenced into the history of what happened before. So whereas the job would have been far more,
it's kind of like they have no baggage, you know, and they're just kind of more receptive to, let's just focus on, well, this is what Jesus said, and has the issue been for a while, you know, how do you communicate? I'm sure you're given your own personal experience. Hey, faith makes my life better. End of.
Yeah, but it does. Like, I don't think you can open up the young person's head and pour the catechism in. That's not going to work. You know, it's just purely not going to work. They're not going to take it in. They're not going to understand it. But when you personalize it and journey with them and talk to them and explain to them and gradually bring in, this is why the church teaches this. This is where Jesus talked about this, then that, and the other. This is why Jesus wants us to live this way. And the why. A lot of the time, young people know what the church teaches, but they don't know why. So it's bringing them to that. And I think we're almost at times going, oh, well, young people aren't interested in the church anymore, and we're fobbing them off. They are interested. But we're taking the easier route out of not giving them the explanation, as opposed to going, let's do this. I think the church is making great strides now in youth ministry. Like, there's some great, exciting initiatives coming forward that I know the church here in Ireland are planning in the next while. And it's exciting, you know, like, The bishops are great. They're prioritizing youth ministry. They want to build it up, and they want to engage with the youth and they want to show what the church is all about. And that's fantastic. It's brilliant, and it gives hope. And I think, you know, that's what we as the faithful have to see as well, is that the church is not dead. It's very much alive, and it's going to keep working. It's God's church, and these young people will get an experience. And like you said, all the superficial and secularization and wanting everything now and consumerism. Yeah, that's there, but they have that and they know it's meaningless. You know, it's only temporary. It only lasts half an hour before you're looking to move on to something new again. There's nothing tangible or more tangible than having a faith in God and knowing that he's there and that he's constant.
Well, Rob, what better way to end our conversation than on a point of hope? It has been so great to have you as our guest today on The Confession Box, Rob O'Hara. Thanks so much for being with us today. That's it for me for now. You've been listening to The Confession Box. I've been your host, Wendy Grace. Please do subscribe, like and share on your favourite platform. And I'll talk to you soon. God bless you.